Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. What is life like for people of mixed race here and elsewhere? We'll get a first-hand report a little bit later, but first, Washington University stands among top-tier American colleges and universities, and on several levels. As we continue our examination of institutions of higher learning in our region, we're happy to have with us the Washington University Chancellor, Mark Wrighton. He is in studio. I'm also joined by St. Louis Public Radio education reporter, Dale Singer. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Chancellor, great to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Today is a busy day, I know, at the university. First day of classes for you.
First day of classes. This is the most exciting time of year. Great new students. We welcomed 1,735 new undergraduates, an equal number of graduate and professional students, and probably 50 new faculty. Great refreshment for our university.
Well, thanks for spending part of this exciting day here with us. You've already done it in part, but I'd like to begin by asking you to give us a very brief thumbnail sketch, profile, if you will, of WashU.
Sure. Washington University has about 13,000 students in total. Half of them are undergraduates and half are in one of our graduate or professional programs. We also have about 13,000 employees. And when I mention that to undergraduate parents, they say, now I understand why you're so expensive. But one of the great things that we have is a wonderful medical school, and it's large and very strong. We have education, of course, the medical doctorate. We do a large amount of sponsored research, and we also have a very large clinical program that brings enormous benefit to our region. So a lot of our employment is associated with the School of Medicine.
You mentioned people asking, why are you so expensive? We've talked to a number of people in your position here on this program in recent weeks. They all are saying the same thing, that the financial part of running a major institution is very, very difficult right now. I assume it's the same for WashU.
Financing higher education is very complicated. Mm-hmm. When we look at the three lines of business, if you will, education, research, and patient care, all are businesses that are challenged. In education and research, we clearly do not have the opportunity to create a surplus. In education, we're striving to recruit the most talented students independent of family circumstance, so we're investing very heavily in financial aid. So though our tuition, our sticker price, is very high, we're not making money. In research, many people believe that with the research funding that comes to Washington University, about $500 million a year, there's the feeling that we're making money on research. In fact, we're a cost-minus contractor. For every dollar that we bring in from the federal government, we need to provide somewhere in our system at least 30 cents to support the research that we commit to doing with the dollar that comes from the federal government.
Well, clearly, it's a major enterprise. You mentioned diversity a moment ago, and I know that is something that your student body has been concerned about in recent years, and certainly you have been too. Where are we in that whole spectrum right now?
This is my 21st year as chancellor. I followed a great leader, Bill Danforth. He was a wonderful mentor. We continue to interact on a regular basis. And as I assumed the chancellorship in 1995, we resolved to focus on three key objectives in connection with admissions: quality, diversity, and affordability. And each of those is extremely important. In recent years, we've been able, with the resources that we have developed, to take a step up in terms of committing to a stronger degree of diversity. And this year has been particularly rewarding. We've taken a step forward on recruiting more African American students, up from 6% last year to 9% this year, with Hispanic Americans moved from 5 to 9% this year, with Pell Grant eligible students, a surrogate for socioeconomic diversity, We moved from last year to 8% to over 11%, almost 12% this year. So it's resources, focus on recruiting students from diverse backgrounds, visiting proactively high schools in the region, and putting resources to bear on this problem, both human and financial.
I saw on your website that the total sticker price for tuition and everything is a little bit more than $63,000. How many people actually pay that price?
The full sticker price is supported by something slightly over half of our student body at the undergraduate level. But I need to point out that though many people do, in fact, support the full sticker price, there's no one that's paying the full cost of what we provide. We continue to depend on the generosity of generations of people who preceded current students. We built up a very strong endowment. We also have received very generous support from the St. Louis community and increasingly nationally and internationally. Philanthropic support plus the endowment spending is now of the order of 20% of our $2.5 billion total revenue. So philanthropy ultimately has made this educational experience possible for many who couldn't afford it. And even for those who are providing the full sticker price, the quality of what we offer is more than they're paying for. I know that's hard for people to accept, but we're doing something very special with the people that we recruit to Washington University.
There was a piece on NPR over the weekend concerning endowments. Malcolm Gladwell, a noted author and journalist, was reporting and he was very concerned about the fact that endowment interest is tax-free. Is that correct, as he put it? And that major universities, and he cited Harvard and Yale and Princeton among others, are more interested in earning revenue from the endowment fund than they are in using the revenue from the endowment fund to helping students. Does that ring true to you in any way?
Many people are concerned about what value institutions like ours and those you mentioned, what value do we bring to society that justifies our tax-exempt status. When we look at what we're doing here at Washington University, I have to say I'm very proud of what we do. And as I came into the studio just a little while ago, I saw a headline that said, stock market snaps back from a 1,000-point decline. The endowment certainly can go up, but the 2008-2009 crisis showed that that endowment can also go down. And today's volatile stock market illustrates well the importance of financial stability for institutions like ours. The endowment is a stabilizer and a contributor to being able to do many of the great things that we do. I mentioned that in connection with the support for research, we are a cost-minus contractor. Where do the resources come to help us be leaders in cancer genomics, immunological approaches to dealing with cancer, addressing the challenge of Alzheimer's disease, coming up with new antibiotics? The matching resources we need come from philanthropy and from the spending from the endowment. One of the things that gives me great pride is that during my chancellorship, we have developed the Alvin J. Siteman Cancer Center. This is the third largest cancer center in America. We underwent a five-year review, after 5 years, and we were given the highest rating by the National Cancer Institute. We're a comprehensive center bringing enormous value to our entire community. And through the research that we do, we're coming up with approaches to addressing cancer that will bring benefit to people all around the nation and around the world. So, yes, there is a concern about the growth in the financial assets, but we believe that we're making a great investment in the future of young people, a great investment in what's going to bring great value to society.
How big is the endowment and how is it spent?
At the end of June, I think our endowment was approaching $7 billion. Maybe it's a little less today. Our endowment is spent according to the wishes of those who make the contributions to the endowment. For example, an individual may make a commitment to support an endowed scholarship, and we're required to use the spendable income for the purpose of supporting a needy student. Another donor may say, my interest is in supporting an endowed professorship in the School of Medicine. That then obligates us to use that portion of the endowment to support medicine, and we can't move those funds around. They're said to be restricted endowments. So we have endowments that support students. We have endowments that support programs. We have endowments that support faculty. We have endowments that support the physical infrastructure of the university. And we rely on philanthropic support to create those endowments to assure a brighter future for our students and for our faculty.
Are there any unrestricted funds that you have discretion to use?
We do have some unrestricted funds, and different account holders, if I could say it that way, do have some discretion over how those resources are going to be used. When we had the dramatic decline in the value of the endowment from the 08-09 era, that's a time when you can really understand the need to have unrestricted resources available so as not to interrupt critical programs such as those in research, support for students, and salary support for the distinguished faculty. So yes, we do have unrestricted resources, but we have precious little in the way that would be unobligated. Almost all of the endowment is fully obligated on an enduring basis.
You've been listening to Mark Wright, the Chancellor at Washington University. Chancellor, we're going to have to take a break. The Chancellor is with me, of course, in studio, as is Dale Singer, St. Louis Public Radio education reporter. We'll come back, continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, as time allows, we'll take calls at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on Air. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. Dale Singer and I will continue our conversation with Chancellor Mark Wright of Washington University in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Demolition work is underway today at the Carter Carburetor Superfund site in North St. Louis. The site's structures and grounds are contaminated with toxic industrial chemicals, solvents, and other substances, as well as asbestos, after decades of use as a manufacturing plant for auto parts. Cleanup work will continue at the site until late 2017. St. Louis Board of Aldermen President Louis Reed has called members back from summer vacation early in order to hold a hearing on a minimum wage increase. Aldermen will consider a proposal tomorrow to institute a new citywide minimum wage of $13 an hour by 2020. And Bloomberg is reporting today that St. Louis-based Monsanto has made an increased takeover to Syngenta AG. The report says the agribusiness giant is trying to bring the Swiss agrochemical producer to the negotiating table after Monsanto's earlier offer was rejected. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to Chancellor Wrighton. Chancellor, you mentioned the top tier that Washington University finds itself in so many categories. I was surprised to find one this past week in researching this program, the Kansas City Star, indicating that WashU is in the top 10 in campus crime.
I'm not sure where that information comes from. We haven't focused on that as a key challenge. We find ourselves surrounded by Clayton on one side, University City, and City of St. Louis. Campus crime is reported on an annual basis according to the Clery Act. I haven't noted that we're in the top few in that regard. Our overall record on campus is one that is very strong, and students and faculty and staff feel quite secure, certainly on the Danforth campus. In the medical school, we're entirely in the city of St. Louis, and those crime statistics have to be reported as well.
So you're surprised as well by the Kansas City Star's report on that.
I wouldn't put us, you know, as in a position where I feel we're particularly vulnerable. We're vigilant about campus crime, of course, but that has not been, you know, as large a challenge as being in the top 10 would imply. Right. So, yes, it's a bit of a surprise to me.
All right. Let's move on to something else then, and I'll look further to see what other statistics we can come up with in that regard. What should the role of an institution such as yours be in a time of community crisis or turmoil, such as we have experienced here in the past year, particularly last summer?
Washington University is a major employer here. With our 13,000-plus employees, we're very much a part of the community. We're the third largest employer, according to my understanding. Obviously, therefore, many people have their homes and live here. We have employees from all parts of this region, including from Ferguson. And so we care deeply about the community, and we're engaged. Soon after the tragedy in Ferguson, I communicated with our community and noted that overcoming health disparities, overcoming the lack of economic opportunity, addressing uneven access to education, and overcoming racism would all be important agenda items for us. So as a university and as a university that is a significant component of the economic structure of this region, we play an important role.
Are students today interested in public service, interested in these kind of issues?
Very much so. In fact, in thinking through how we would respond, we have encouraged the Gephardt Institute for Civic and Community Engagement, which has a component of opportunity for all students, faculty, and staff to become involved in public service activities. I'm very proud of the work of Professor Jason Purnell of the Brown School, who, together with collaborators at St. Louis University, has developed a very well-documented case for working to overcome health disparities in our region. This has been of great interest to us institutionally. And I might note that Professor Purnell's work was communicated prior to the tragedy in August of last year. We have a lot of work to do in that arena, and I'm also very pleased that we have launched our Institute for Public Health at Washington University. A part of that mission is to overcome health disparities in our region. We've launched a program to help talented high school students who, if they go to college, would be first-generation college students. We're in our second full year of launching that program. Again, started before the Ferguson tragedy, but we've doubled the size of the program in the aftermath. There are important things that we can do also to encourage stronger educational opportunities for all students in our region. And I'm proud that we're partnered with the Knowledge is Power program charter schools. And we have just agreed, and the school has been launched. We're sponsoring the Hawthorne Leadership School for Girls focused on STEM education in the city of St. Louis. We have quite a number of students and faculty who are interested in these agendas.
There are initiatives taking place at Washington University, as I understand it, on the issue of gun violence, obviously a source of great concern in this community, particularly now. What exactly is going on? What's the university doing?
Last spring, in April, we launched our gun violence initiative. We're approaching this as a public health challenge, and our objective is to try to learn what we can do to reduce death and injury from guns. We believe that there are programmatic activities that could help lessen these challenges. We believe that there must be some knowledge that needs to be learned so that we can do a better job in avoiding death and injury from guns. So that's a research agenda. And we know there's an educational component here to overcome the challenge of accidents from guns. And we also know that there's work to be done in the community, and we're looking for community partners. At our launch event in April, we had as a speaker James Clark of A Better Family Life, and we're partnered with Better Family Life to work to overcome this challenge of gun violence.
And you're partnering also, as I understand it, with Prosecutor Joyce and also Chief Dotson. Is that correct?
Yes, we've reached out to many in our community who are working on these issues, care about them, and we hope that through this academic year, we can continue to lift to people's consciousness the challenge that we face while identifying knowledge gaps that we could contribute to filling and identifying programmatic initiatives that we can undertake right away to lessen the challenge of gun violence.
We have a couple of callers here. I'd like to try to get some in as time will allow. We'll start with Charles calling from South City. Charles, you're on the air with Chancellor Wrighton.
Hello. It's interesting that the Chancellor has just, in my opinion, demonstrated the context of what I was about to say. I was and would like to talk about how it has become very clear to me in the last few years that education is about lighting a fire, not filling a bucket. I worked in Southeast Idaho in Pocatello University for about a year and a half on a project, and it became very apparent to me how locked into the idea of credentialing that community was. And then coming back to St. Louis, I started paying more attention to it. And of course, I'm not talking about specific engineering, medicine, things of that nature. But the Chancellor demonstrates by his ability to talk about such a breadth and depth of information what the value of an education is. Here's my point. I believe that the paradigm of education needs to change from this credentialing thing, which is really locking us in, to a lifestyle. In other words, you belong to a university throughout your life, because an educated person is somebody who is daily working the deal.
Charles, I think we have the point. We'll give the Chancellor an opportunity to respond. Do you understand what Charles is getting at, Chancellor?
I believe it's important to have a good balance of idealism and pragmatism. We're preparing our students for a complete life of meaning and purpose. At the same time, I can tell you that the parents are anxious to understand that there will be employment opportunities after the degree program. So we have to keep that balance in mind as we look ahead. And so many people are not prepared at the moment for employment, and we have to focus as a community in preparing people for this ideal of lives of meaning and purpose while also preparing them for the workforce. We have many opportunities, I believe, to do both, and that should be our objective.
All righty. One thing that I wanted to get to that everyone is talking about today in higher education is online education. We only have 2 minutes left. How much time and effort is Washington University devoting to this, and where is that going to take education?
Online education is important today and will be arguably more important as the future unfolds. We're a residential university, and we do not feel threatened by the advent of online education. We're doing experiments. One of the most exciting is an online LLM in U.S. law for international lawyers. People around the world are taking that, and it's a rewarding program. We're also offering online education through University College, and people in our own community can do that.
That's for older folks, right?
It's for anyone. And we believe that online education and the application of technology in education will continue to be more and more important. We have over 125,000 living alumni. They have the opportunity to continue education. They know us. They have been engaged with us. Online educational offerings for our alumni alone would represent a significant opportunity.
I want you to listen to something. This is a surprise for you, by the way. I want you to listen to something and have you react to it.
Shuck the corn, shuck, shuck the corn, shuck the corn, shuck, shuck the corn, pop the corn, pop, pop the corn, pop the corn, pop, pop the corn.
Forge, Chancellor the Mark Wrighton, do you know what this is? Do you recognize it?
Heal the banana. This is our launch to our move-in day. We did this just this past Thursday, August 20th, 7:30 a.m., welcoming 1,735 new students.
Is this a tradition at your institution?
It has become so.
Is it your next career?
Well, anyone... I look a lot better on radio than I do peeling the banana. I'm not a great dancer, but it is a nice tradition.
Well, we all look a lot better on radio, I have to say that. But you did look a little bit uncomfortable, but it's a nice tradition. In 5 seconds, how long has it been going on?
I think about 5 years.
Okay, a new tradition being born at Washington University. Mark Wrighton, thank you so much for being with us. Have a very successful new year at Washington University. It's great to have an opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you.
Dale Singer, thank you very much. Coming up, what life is like growing up as a person of mixed race. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.